This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Keystone AgriScience, your source for quality industrial hemp seedlings. With great genetics, high in CBD, low in THC, and ready to ship to your farm at the end of May. Call 717-799-5153 for more details. Take the guesswork out of growing hemp with Keystone AgriScience, offering free consulting and guidance to help make sure your hemp operation will be successful. Supplies are limited and there's a 500 plant minimum, so call today for more information. Keystone AgriScience. 717-799-5153. Life is funny and full of unexpected twists and turns. Case in point, last week I was at the PASA conference in Lancaster, the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture. Every year they have a conference. There's workshops and lectures and a trade show. It's like a gathering of the tribes for people involved in progressive agriculture, alternative agriculture, organic agriculture. It's amazing. You should check it out. So I was there to cover a Q&A workshop on transitioning your farm, your produce farm, to organic and how to get certified. And you can read that story, if I ever finish writing it, in this Saturday's paper, February 16th. Look for it. Anyway, so at the PASA conference, there was also a presentation on industrial hemp. So you know I was going to that one, right? It was supposed to be given by Ross Duffield, who you may remember was our very first guest on our very first industrial hemp podcast. Go back and listen to that in case you missed it. He's very knowledgeable. Anyway, so he couldn't make it for whatever reason, and so the PASA people put together a panel discussion with people in the hemp industry. There was a guy named Ben Davies from Wild Fox Provisions, and he talked about his CBD farm in Berks County. Tara Caton was from the Rodale Institute, and she talked about Rodale's hemp trials. There was a Lancaster County farmer named Tom Colton, Sarah Pickle from the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. And then there were these two guys who said they were about to open a CBD cafe in the city of Lancaster. And they had a connection to the county. They both grew up here. But they currently had a CBD cafe in Colorado. So after the panel discussion was over, I talked to these guys. They seemed knowledgeable and passionate. And of course, those are really the only two requirements for being on this podcast. So it was only afterward that somebody said to me, "You know who that was, right?" "No, tell me." "Oh, you'll figure it out." "No, please tell me. I'll never guess it." And so it turns out that I had just met one of Lancaster County's most famous people, and I didn't even know it. Floyd Landis, he's a cyclist who rode with Lance Armstrong, and he won the Tour de France, and he was stripped of the title, and all this incredible stuff. I didn't know any of this at the time. I think back in 06, sure, I may have heard his name. Back in 2010, when some of the controversy was still going on, I sort of tuned out anything related to Lance Armstrong. I had sort of Lance Armstrong fatigue, if you will. So I've done some research and I figured out who Floyd is. Here's a little bit of what the Wall Street Journal said about Floyd back in October of last year. "Landis is a complicated figure in cycling, a gifted, hardworking racer raised in a Mennonite family who dazzled first as one of Armstrong's top support riders before striking out on his own. He's admired by some for stepping forward and breaking cycling's poisonous code of silence, but still disliked by others for his initial adamant protests of his innocence." So there you go. Kind of a big deal. Anyway, for the past few years, Floyd has been running a CBD cafe in Colorado called Floyd's of Leadville. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. My name is Eric Herlock, and on today's show, we'll talk to Floyd Landis and his partner, Jake Sittler, also an accomplished Lancaster County cyclist. We'll hear all about their plans for bringing a CBD cafe to Lancaster, Floyd's of Lancaster, and how they intend to work with farmers in a way that could really boost hemp production in Lancaster County, the surrounding counties, and Pennsylvania in general. So stick around and we'll get right into our conversation with Floyd and Jake. Hey, listeners. If you're not a current subscriber to Lancaster Farming Newspaper, now's your chance. We have a special deal for you. Just go to lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal for a discounted offer on the number one agricultural newspaper in the Mid-Atlantic region. So check it out, lancasterfarming.com/podcast deal. Okay, back to the show. Hey, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. It's great to have you guys here. Could you introduce yourselves for us?
Yeah, hey, this is Floyd Landis. I'm a Lancaster County native. Been living other places for a long, long time and looking to start some business ventures in Lancaster County again.
Okay, and Jake Sittler?
Hi, my name is Jake Sittler. Also Lancaster County native, Marietta, Pennsylvania. And I work within Floyd's of Leadville, and we're also looking to grow the presence here in Lancaster County.
Okay. Well, I first met you guys last week at the PASA conference in Lancaster, and I thought you were just two guys who were about to open up a CBD cafe in Lancaster, which of course you are, but I didn't realize that there was this incredible backstory. Floyd, can you bring us up to speed on what might be considered your controversial history?
Yeah, sure. So 10 years ago, 12 years ago now, I guess I retired from professional cycling. I raced, as a professional mountain bike racer for a few years while I was still living in Lancaster. And then I moved to California and I got into, road bike racing and over the course of a couple of years, ended up racing the Tour de France with Lance Armstrong three times and then winning the tour in 2006 and, getting disqualified for performance enhancing drugs, and then spent a few years not knowing what to do with my life, and was living and working in Colorado when marijuana was legalized, and I ended up using it for to help me get off of opioids. I'd been taking them a lot for just injuries that I had throughout my racing career and the hip replacement that I had, and it benefited me a lot. And you know, before that, I didn't really think too much about the medical marijuana side of things. I always just thought it was kind of an end run around the law, but it does have tremendous health benefits. And so got into the licensed marijuana business in Colorado about 4 years ago. And then since then we've added a line of products, hemp derived products containing CBD that we market and sell on the internet and bike shops and things like that. And that's really the main reason we're interested in Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania, up until hemp was made illegal back in the 30s, hemp was a major part of the agricultural, lay of the land in Pennsylvania. And I think that it's going to end up getting back to that now that it's been legalized again. And so that's kind of the story about how we ended up on this podcast.
Yeah, right. People are wondering, wait, cyclists, CBD? So yeah, you've announced plans to open up a CBD cafe, Floyd's of Lancaster. Can you tell us about those plans?
Yeah, it was, this was kind of more Jake's idea than mine. I think I'll let him tell you about his ideas.
All right, Jake, tell us.
Floyd and I were kind of trying to come up with some ideas and our way to work back into the Lancaster community. And I, you know, Floyd had probably left Lancaster City 10 years ago, and I've been here growing up seeing, man, Lancaster is amazing. Just the amazing businesses that have started popping up in our area. And just the vibe that Lancaster City has and the tourism and everything. And kind of started my wheels spinning a little bit. And it's one of the ideas that we kind of threw out together. And we found an awesome spot in an old tobacco warehouse on Prince Street. And I worked with one of the bike sponsors that I've had. I'm also a professional cyclist, and I'd worked with him, you know, for many years. And he offered to throw some bikes in there for us. And we were like, hey, let's do a CBD cafe.
And so who's the intended, you know, customer base or market for the cafe?
I mean, it's pretty much there doesn't need to be any customer base in terms of like a specific group of people, because CBD can benefit anyone from, you know, middle-aged athletes to older athletes to the elderly. I mean, pretty much my whole entire family takes it. My younger sister, who's a runner, my mom, my dad takes it for knee pain. You know, I take it. I was hit by a car, broke my back.
Ouch.
Yeah. I mean, there is no intended customer base. We'd love to just reach out to the whole entire community and be there for the farmers, be there for anyone that loves good coffee, anyone that likes bikes, all sorts of people.
All right. So let's get into talking about growing the hemp. So you're trying to get all, you know, Pennsylvania produced hemp, or even you're going to go for Lancaster County produced hemp?
Look, we're not going to try to make it exclusive to Lancaster County, but that's the area we know. And when you grow hemp for medicinal purposes, for extracting CBD or other cannabinoids, it takes a bit of experience to know how to really on every level how to do it. It's the same as growing marijuana on a large scale, which I assume most people in Pennsylvania don't have any experience with. But growing industrial hemp for the fibers is a different strain of hemp, and it's much easier to grow because you don't need to make sure that you kind of trick the plants into producing large bud and large flower. That's where the medicinal properties are, in the oil and in the bud itself. So what we'd like to provide to the farmers, while, you know, along with the cafe and a place to come and learn about hemp in general, is some guidance that we've learned from growing marijuana over the years, and growing hemp, and help them just sort of avoid some of the, you know, the things that you can only learn by trial and error.
Can we talk about acreage? Like, how much hemp do you foresee needing to supply your line of products and your cafe?
I mean, so in terms of acreage, I mean, for us, with the processing facilities and what's available, I mean, we can, if everything works out, you know, we would be looking to be able to handle 500 to 700 acres in Pennsylvania. And then beyond that, kind of maybe be able to pass it along if necessary. So it's not a small amount. It's just, like Floyd had mentioned, you know, it needs to be high genetics and that type of thing.
Right. And then how do you control for quality and variety?
You know, Floyd can probably talk a little more on that, but I mean, we are essentially, with proper processing facilities, you are able to see the content of the CBD within these hemp. Mm-hmm. And you'll know how much biomass is going to be necessary to produce the desired output. So, you know, the higher the CBD quality within the hemp, the less biomass you need to use. So that's better for us because, you know, these machines can only process a certain amount a day.
And are you looking to put your own, you know, processing center in, or who will do your processing?
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk on that point? Or?
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, so, you know, we've done processing of the exact same nature on the marijuana side in Colorado and in Oregon for a while. And we're in the process of finding a location to set up processing in Lancaster there so that, you know, farmers can bring their hemp. Now, look, it's not just all about us. I have obviously a soft spot for Lancaster County because I grew up there, and I'm happy to finally have a reason to go do some business there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we really feel like this kind of crop is the best sort of prepared group of farmers to grow this kind of crop, because there's a lot of just real attention to detail and manual labor involved. And whenever, you know, they've learned to grow high quality stuff, there's going to be far more grown there than we're going to have, you know, the ability to process or use. But it's going to take a while. It takes a couple of crops to learn how different strains will respond to the environment or the soil or other things. So it'll take a few years till Lancaster County's up to, you know, its full potential. But we'd like to be part of it on the way there.
Okay. How do you see, you know, like the relationship with the farmers, where they would contract directly with you?
Yeah, we're kind of working through that process right now. I mean, this was all very new to us too, because, you know, the farm bill just passed. So we're kind of trying to move in that direction as fast as possible. We've thrown out a few ideas, but, you know, first step, we'd love to just start. I've been having a lot of phone calls with a lot of different farmers the past week. I probably talked to 15 to 20 different farmers alone. And we're just kind of figuring out the best process. And, you know, I think that's going to be the first step, is getting them in contact with the right people for the seed, and then pointing them in the right direction with proper farming techniques. And then, you know, I think Floyd and I, like Floyd said, you know, you have a soft spot for these farmers. So our goal is not to exploit anybody. Our goal is to be here as a resource.
Okay.
Yeah, that was actually one of my next questions here. Because, you know, you can sort of see the optics of it. You've got, you know, Mennonite farmers and Amish farmers looking the part, you know, they're Pennsylvania farmers growing your hemp. And it could almost seem exploitive if taken the wrong direction. So what are you doing to avoid that?
Yeah, I mean, so what's going to happen is you're going to have a group of people that are going to collectively get together, Amish and Mennonite farmers, because, you know, whether it's transportation issues, whether it's access to information, whether it's access to seed, and that's fine. And we have, you know, that's their prerogative, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. You know, for us, though, we just want to be a resource. And then when things start moving along and we start providing that resource, I mean, if it's as simple as a right to buy contract at fair market value, that's something we provide. That's kind of all we're looking for. You know, we have a retail line, we have the ability to resell. So, you know, we're looking to just broaden our brand. And I mean, yeah, that's about it.
Right. Okay. Now, given the sort of controversial history with Floyd, is there a trust issue that you need to get over sort of to connect further with the Lancaster community?
I don't really know. I mean, we run a legitimate business, and if they want to sell to us, they can sell to us. If they don't want to, they don't have to. Right. We're not in any way trying to insert ourselves into the process. They're more than welcome to take our advice or not. Mm-hmm. It's not going to cost them anything. And if they want to work with us, then that's fine.
Pricing. Do you know much about, like, sort of the your pricing? Like, how can you guarantee fair prices to the farmers?
I was just going to say that there's a fairly large liquid market for the raw material, the hemp yield, and the price is determined by an open market. And, you know, our goal is to just make sure that we have the source of high quality products so that we can produce it and turn it into our own products. It's not, there won't be any opaqueness to it. I mean, there is a market. I mean, right now it sells good quality hemp bud, sells for between $35 and $45 a pound, depending on the CBD content. Mm-hmm. You know, once it's processed, it's worth more once you've refined it down to the oil or even more refined into isolate, which is just the CBD. But when it comes to just the raw material itself, there's a market for it. And the reason we'd like to be in Lancaster is that, you know, if you envision what it looks like, hemp bud is just like marijuana. It doesn't, for the amount of space it takes up, it doesn't weigh tremendous amounts. So when you're growing large amounts of this in a given area, it's helpful to have processing nearby rather than having to send multiple truckloads to another state where they would turn it into something that would be easily shipped in, you know, 5-gallon buckets instead of, you know, giant trucks. So the benefit of being nearby is just one of economics and, you know, making things more efficient.
So I'm trying to picture, you know, the fields of hemp. Would it look more like, you know, field crops, you know, rows of corn, or would it be more like, you know, like row crops, like a produce farm, or like a row of tomatoes versus, you know, like acres of corn?
Yeah, it needs to be rows because you need access to the plants throughout the growing process. Mm-hmm. You know, to inspect them for, first of all, to make sure if you're growing it for CBD, to make sure they're all female plants, to check them for any kind of pests that you might be able to manage if you catch it early, things like that. So it's typically grown in rows that have some, you know, a foot or two between them once the plants are mature. And the plants, when you grow plants for CBD, if you're growing it for just the fibers, the industrial hemp, they grow much taller, you know, 8-10 feet, even more sometimes. Whereas the strains that contain more CBD are generally, you know, 3 or maybe 4 feet tall. They don't necessarily get nearly as big. So you'll need probably five feet for a given row, something like that.
Okay. So I saw you at PASA. So I don't want to make the assumption, but I'm going to. You're into sustainable progressive agriculture.
It wouldn't be that self-evident if you're not in the marijuana industry and generally the hemp and marijuana people are at least do business together and exchange ideas and are often the same people in both industries. Mm-hmm. It's generally, that's the approach anyway. And by regulation, very few pesticides and other things like that are even allowed in these marijuana cultivations because people are smoking it, and there's all kinds of concern about risks of smoking chemicals that are haven't been tested. So,
sure.
In general, the techniques that are used for growing growing hemp for CBD are of the sustainable nature and of the sort of as organic as you can get nature.
Okay. Do you think that will be a hurdle for Lancaster County farmers? Or do you think there's enough of that sort of organic mindedness in the area to pick it up?
Well, they'll have to, if that's not their approach, then, you know, I think that over time that the educational process that comes with it, they'll want to take that approach anyway. But if they're used to using more commercial methods, then it'll be a bit of an adaptation because, it's part of it is due to the hand and, you know, the physical labor nature of having to grow this stuff. There isn't large scale equipment for harvesting it or planting it or any of these other things. So it just sort of lends itself more to a caring about the earth approach to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through the planting process? Would you be direct seeding or would this be, you know, seedlings, plugs?
For the most part, and certainly initially, if for a given farmer in a given area, you'd want to try a bunch of, you want to source some good seeds, which is going to be a complicated problem because it's a brand new industry and finding seeds that you know are the ones that you want is an issue. But ideally you'd try a bunch of different variations and see which ones respond the best to that environment and your growing style. And then you would take clones from those and possibly, you know, grow male, female plants and make your own seeds. But initially, you wouldn't have a choice, right? You would start with seeds on the first crop, and then probably you'd move over to cloning because once you start cloning, you're taking the exact, you know, makeup of the plant that's not just responds the best, but the plant that's within that specific strain that also responds the best, and you can get greater yields that way. So the process, it won't be a situation where somebody can just plant 100 acres of this in year one. And I would advise against any such approach because that doesn't work. It's right. More of a, there is some trial and error in a new area, no matter how much experience you have.
Could you get more than one harvest a season with this? Could you do, you know, something an early summer and then a later summer crop?
You know, I'm not really sure if that would be a good idea. It takes about 3 months, depending on the strains, you know, a couple weeks less or a couple weeks more for them to mature from when you plant them outside. And if you needed to take that 6 month window, I mean, you'd have some risk of adverse weather on the sure. front and back side of that. So, I mean, I think initially the prudent thing to do would be to just grow one crop until you're very skilled at that, and then possibly try two in a smaller area and see if that works.
Okay. And then, like, during the season, what sort of maintenance or cultivation are we looking at?
So it depends how automated you want to set up the watering and the nutrient distribution system, but it's not that complicated to set up a small drip system with a tank where you can mix in what you need to, you know, keep nitrogen and other levels where they need to be. But then you have just sort of daily checks on the plants to make sure that if some pests or other issues arise, that you can contain them or eliminate them. But there's a few months in the middle where it's not tremendously labor intensive. It's just a matter of making sure you're paying attention.
Okay. And you would still need to get tested for THC levels by the state throughout the growing season?
Yeah, I'm actually not sure what Pennsylvania's approach to that is going to be now that they have a larger or will have a larger pool of farmers to manage.
Right.
But typically in states that have been doing it for a while, they'll have a system where they'll spot check random farms or all of them if they have the resources once they get closer to maturity to make sure that the strains you're using are not going to be considered marijuana, in which case they end up having to be destroyed, that's another issue, right? You want to make sure you have the right seeds and the right strains, and until you've done it with those, it's sometimes hard to know because it's not like there's a single trustworthy place to get these seeds at the moment.
So right now in Pennsylvania, there's, I guess it's House Bill 50 moving through. You know, it's trying to legalize recreational marijuana. Would that help or hinder the CBD industry?
I don't believe it'll have any effect on it. Those operate in sort of, you know, parallel universes and don't really overlap other than often the people that are involved in both industries overlap. But there's no states right now that allow marijuana licensed areas to also grow hemp. They have to be separated, and they wouldn't have any adverse impact on each other, except for places that were growing industrial hemp for the fibers where they're growing male and female plants, and you'd have the risk of pollination.
Right.
That pollination would affect marijuana or hemp, you know, equally adversely. So, you know, they're two different industries. That's one risk that I can think of, but there isn't really a huge, you know, benefit to having them both operating at the same time. Although I mean, as far as my opinion goes, I think that's a wise move. I think it's, you know, you can debate the philosophy of whether or not you should have, you know, marijuana be legal. But one thing you can't debate is the results, the social, you know, impact that making it illegal has had, and the results that states have legalized it have gotten. So, I mean, it's almost impossible to justify continuing with the whole war on drugs. It was a complete failure.
Speaking of drugs, you had mentioned earlier about opioid use. Do you think CBD has a role to play in alleviating the opioid crisis that's gripping the state and the rest of the country?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, once you get addicted to them, it's very difficult to get off. That's part of the problem. And this isn't exactly a fix for that, but it does help to manage the underlying reason that people use, you know, opiates other than for pain. I mean, opiates do have a legitimate reason to be used in medicine, but once they end up being abused, it's often, you know, either underlying psychological or just anxiety issues or pain itself, and often both. And CBD helps to manage all of those things. And it's obviously not as strong a drug as narcotics, but if you can mitigate those feelings of anxiety and also, you know, manage inflammation with this substance, I think it'll have a big impact on people's ability to stay away from them.
What was your initial CBD experience like with your pain and recovery and anxiety?
Initially, I was, because the whole CBD thing didn't really become clear until fairly recently, but initially I was using just marijuana to manage it. And you know, marijuana is fine some of the time, and some people function fine on it. But I don't necessarily get a lot done if I'm using marijuana for it. So over time, we started realizing that higher CBD strains of marijuana were the ones that were more effective and didn't get you as high and had just as much pain management effect. And then the ability to actually grow hemp on a large scale came along, and much more pure CBD products evolved. And this has all been in the last couple of years. So that's kind of how I came to it. I mean, I think the marijuana step isn't necessarily necessary. I think a lot of people would benefit. People who are using, you know, narcotics to manage pain would benefit by certainly trying CBD at least initially and see if that's strong enough to help them, manage it without other pharmaceutical products.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this year in July when I was hit by a car and burst fracture in my spine, I was able to, I mean, I took a risk, a gamble, but I also knew as a cyclist what it's like to be laid up for a long period of time. And you can definitely, like Floyd said, get a little bit of depression and anxiety, and that kind of compounds with the pain. And I think that's a lot of ways that opioid addiction can start. So I knew and had access to CBD and with Floyd, and that was what I did instead. And it was, you know, honestly the best decision I've ever made.
Do you guys sense any pushback from, you know, big pharma, the people who are making the money from the opioids?
I think that specifically those people have much bigger problems right now than worrying about CBD manufacturers. But there is a drug that's been approved that is hemp-derived CBD, mm-hmm. and it's for, you know, severe epilepsy patients. And there's some, you know, debate within the FDA about how to address the fact that unlicensed manufacturers are selling it, but it's been used for so long, you know, medicinally by human beings for thousands of years that it would be a very difficult legal argument to overcome the threshold of, which is the threshold that's typically used in cases such as this, where something existed on the market or was just generally culturally used and accepted, and then a pharmaceutical company added it as an ingredient in an approved drug. It doesn't then automatically mean they own, you know, exclusive rights to be the only one that's allowed to sell and manufacture it. Whether or not that's ever litigated, it's hard to say. The entire industry is kind of in a transition period where it wasn't legal, now it is, but there's still some confusion within the regulating agencies, the FDA and DEA, things like that, about how to manage it. So Big Pharma obviously always likes to keep control of everything, but I don't think they really have a very good argument here.
So getting to your operation out in Colorado, you've got the cafe there in Leadville, Floyd's of Leadville. And are you sourcing your CBD directly from Colorado farmers?
Right now, yeah, we get all of our raw hemp material from Colorado farmers and we process it there. Okay. But, you know, frankly, that's not a very great state to grow hemp. I mean, it really isn't the right climate.
Okay.
Pennsylvania is far more conducive to growing it without having to put in all the extra work, because the environment just is more of a natural environment for the plant here. So the only reason that Colorado became a large grower of it was because it was one of two or three states that was allowing it at all.
Right.
That'll probably change over time now that, you know, the East Coast and other states are going to allow it.
Okay. So what's the relationship like with Floyd's of Leadville and the farmers? Like, how do you contract with individual farmers, or is there like an organization that you deal with? What's the relationship like?
No, it's more just a friendly business relationship where we over time trust that they're going to provide products that are grow products that are high quality. And I mean, really the only way to learn this is to just to have these kind of relationships where you learn to know the people. I mean, it's a plant, right? And you're growing it, and you can only guess so much as to how well someone's going to be able to do it or what their skill level is until you see what the output is. So it's more just they know we'll pay them a fair price for it, and we make sure that we stay in contact with them and see how their crops are coming along, so we can guess as to what the yield would be and how much we'll need, things like that. But it's not, there's no kind of direct relationship where we try to tie up the market or anything like that.
Okay. For farmers interested in working with you, what should they do?
Jake can talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of taking the lead on that just because I'm here and able to meet with them. But, you know, my email is just jake@floydsofleadville.com. And, you know, if you email me there, I'll take a phone call and we can kind of start to walk them through the process.
Is there anything else that our listeners should know about what you guys are up to?
No, I was just going to say, you know, they just need to make sure they do their due diligence and ask a lot of questions. The last thing we want is the farming community or anyone to just, you know, yes, this is going to be a profitable crop, but it could also be a very unprofitable crop if things are done incorrectly. And the last thing we want is, you know, these farmers to just go and dive head first without doing any diligence. And then they lose a lot of money because, you know, farmers are already struggling, and that's the last thing we want to see.
Okay. Floyd, final words from you?
What you brought up earlier about whether there's a trust issue. I mean, I've had, you know, I grew up in Lancaster and I've had all kinds of experiences and lived all kinds of places. And I think now I appreciate the place more than when I lived there. And I hope that, you know, everybody will give us a chance to show them that we're going to be legitimate partners.
Good. Do you think your story is a story of redemption?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really see it that way. I mean, sometimes I sit and think about all the things that happened and wonder, you know, why at the time I thought that was the right decision. But as far as redemption goes, I mean, people are going to have their opinion about it. And if they're enlightened about, you know, what I lived through and on a deeper level than just the surface of what was reported on the news, then I think they'd be fairly understanding of it. But it's not a, I mean, I can't make it a, a goal to try to go out and convince everybody that I'm a great guy. They can have their own opinion, and there's really not much I can do about it, but I'll do my best to demonstrate that that's the case and see how it goes.
All right. Well, thanks, Floyd. Thanks, Jake. I appreciate your time today, and I wish you great success in your new endeavors back home here in Lancaster.
Yeah. Thanks for the time. Yeah. Thanks, Eric. We appreciate it.
And thank you all for listening to today's show. And as always, if you have comments or questions, send them to me, podcast@lancasterfarming.com. My name is Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. On next week's show, we'll talk to Mark O'Neill and Bill Nielsen from the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau. If you want to learn more about Floyds of Leadville, check out floydsofleadville.com. All right, until next time, see you in the newspaper.